Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks. Let's take a little trip now to the Museum of Fine Arts for an appreciation of John Singer Sargent. As my co-host Meghna Chakrabarty found out, beyond his beautiful and famous painting, Sargent left behind another legacy, a treasure trove of letters, photographs, and sketches that tell the story of the artist's world.
I've been telling people we're getting to know the man behind the canvas.
This is Erica Hirschler. She's the Kroll Senior Curator of Painting at the MFA, and we're standing in one of the museum's hushed reading rooms, and spread out on the table before us, a small sample of a major recent gift to the MFA, a collection of more than 5,000 pieces of correspondence, sketches, and photographs from legendary portraitist John Singer Sargent.
So what was your personal reaction when you found out that the MFA was going to get this archive?
I was overjoyed because I've used some of the material in the past as a scholar of Sargent in writing essays, but to be able to know that the material was coming into a museum collection, a collection where it can be made available to the public, where it will be for a long time so that scholars of the future will be able to take advantage of it, it's a wonderful thing.
The collection was amassed by Sargent's great-nephew, Richard Ormond, and Warren Adelson, a longtime New York art dealer. The gift is made even more wonderful for the fact that Sargent had a long history with the MFA. It owns Sargent's in almost every medium: oil, watercolor, drawings, murals. And one of his masterpieces, the luminous The Daughters of Edward Darley Boyd, still hangs in the MFA. And of course, we should also mention Sargent's long relationship with the city and socialites of Boston itself. That part of Sargent we know. He was a master 19th and early 20th century portraitist. But the letters reveal a John Singer Sargent we don't know. For example, Sargent the Fanboy. Hirschler points to a letter written in French by Sargent in a wildly illegible filigree.
I think I can see in the first line, Mon cher Monet.
That's right.
I think that's what it says.
That is what it says.
But of course, the rest of it is also in French.
Sargent and Monet were close friends. They met in Paris in the 1870s and remained friends for the rest of their lives.
And Sargent completely admires him. The letters show him admiring Monet's work, wanting to visit with him, encouraging Monet to come visit, which Monet did. He made more trips to London than I realized that he had. And Sargent says, I'm coming to meet your train. Let's have dinner. I've invited you to lunch. I've invited Whistler to come. So you have this sense of excitement and sort of fandom.
Here, then, is one of those behind-the-canvas moments. The master portraitist gushing over the uncompromising avant-garde landscape genius.
Sargent is very excited to actually come to own some of Monet's work.
Uh-huh.
And in the end, he owns 4 of Monet's paintings. But this letter documents one of them. And he talks about going to Durand-Ruel, Monet's dealer, and working on an exchange so that in exchange for one something else Sargent owned, he acquires a Monet, and he draws a picture of it.
Oh, he sketched it on the back
so
of the letter.
So he sketches it in the letter. It shows 2 little houses, and there are trees in the foreground, and you can just see a horizon line that's actually water. And it's one of Monet's paintings of the Mediterranean. It's a known picture that today is in a private collection.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, I'm so excited to own this.
It's thrilling, but perhaps not entirely surprising to see Sargent's letters to Monet. He's a young, precocious American painter in Europe when the early letters are written. But the later letters, written near the end of Sargent's life, we see an entirely different aspect of the painter's career. In 1924, just 1 year before Sargent died, he writes a series of letters to a Mr. Clark, who's arranging an exhibition of Sargent's work. The painter is absolutely precise in his directions to Clark: where to put the paintings, how to show them, how many to include.
And what amazes me is there's a letter to Clark just about every day, sometimes twice a day. And that level of engagement with the organizing of an exhibition, even at this late date in Sargent's life, he dies in 1925, this is the year before, shows you how invested he was in his career and that he didn't have a secretary to look after all of these details for him. And he wasn't above it. He was very much in the midst of it, which tells you something very different about him as an artist, I think.
Different how?
Different in that he was engaged with his public persona. He was really a shy man who wasn't out there giving speeches and all of that, but he put himself forward in his work, and he cared very deeply about what pictures got shown and how they were presented, and took a very active role in making that happen, which sometimes can be the difference between an artist with talent who you've never heard of and an artist with talent who really becomes famous.
It makes me wonder what he would have done in the era of text messages if he was sending two letters a day.
Exactly.
Is there anything in the correspondence portion of the archive that sort of gives us more insight into times where Sargent might have struggled or sort of concerns that he had with his own work or sort of aspects of his life that maybe we didn't know more about?
In some ways, I think there are some revealing aspects. He's a private man. He does not pour his soul out on paper. He can complain. In one of the Monet letters, for example, he says that he doesn't have enough work to show that he feels that he hasn't accomplished enough over the past season, and he's worried about having good enough things to put in the next exhibition in Paris, is where he's talking about displaying his work. And he also feels that if he doesn't show in Paris, that people will think he's timid and that he's backing away from that capital of art. So he really wants to show. So you get a sense a little bit of his not quite insecurity, but nervousness about whether what he's doing is sufficient for his ambition.
To understand why Sargent may have been a little nervous, you have to remember just how Paris society had received him in the past. Let's see how to describe it. Gallic chill? That's actually putting it pretty mildly. Outright scandal is more like it. The year was 1884. The year Sargent exhibited what is widely considered today to be one of his greatest paintings ever. Around that time, though, Sargent wrote another letter, and on the back of this letter, there's a note written by yet another person in a round, almost schoolgirl hand.
And it's signed Amélie Gautreau. Amélie Gautreau was Madame X.
Madame X. The stunning portrait of the same name, which today hangs in New York's Metropolitan Museum of Art, it scandalized Parisian society in 1884. A young man, when he painted it, Sargent put Madame X in a tight-fitting black dress, one strap of which initially hung off her shoulder in a manner too suggestive for the chattering classes to bear. Sargent believed it was one of his best works ever, but history tells us the scandal ruined Gautreau's life, or so we're told. But the letter in the collection tells a different story.
I've called it a smoking gun of Sargent's scholarship, because what we know about the portrait of Madame X is that it was extremely controversial when it was shown in Paris at the Salon, and that Madame Gautreau was very upset by it. What we are told in this letter is that she wasn't upset by it in advance of the exhibition.
Oh, interesting.
So she writes to this mutual friend, "Dear friend, Mr. Sargent has made a masterpiece of the portrait." And then she goes on to say, "I'm telling you because he won't." So we know that she thought the painting was fabulous and that neither she nor Sargent anticipated the kind of negative response that it would get when it was put on display.
Sargent decamped Paris for London, and some critics say he never painted anything so daring again. And that is what makes seeing the Sargent correspondence while inside the MFA such a special thing. You are surrounded in the museum by overwhelming evidence of Sargent's genius. We stand in 2015 well assured that this was a man who could make magic with a brush. But the letters, pictures, and sketches in the collection remind us that Sargent was also a man, full of ambition, uncertainty, fanboyish appreciation, and the need for approval and control. So the letters humanize John Singer Sargent in much the same way his paintings immortalized his subjects.
So finally, just to sort of get back to where we started about how this archive gives us a, you know, a very rare and intimate window into, as you said, the man behind the canvas. What is, to you, the most surprising thing that you've discovered so far?
I think for me, the most surprising thing is how hard he worked all the time. We know he was very prolific as a painter. We know that he made hundreds of watercolors, hundreds of portraits, and so on. What I now can see clearly is how much he worked at the business side of his career, writing all those letters himself, talking about how they should be framed, where they should be shown, who you should approach for loans. And that's a consistent thing in Sargent's career. And to be able to document the work that goes into being a painter besides painting, I think, is a revelation.
Even for someone as famous and successful as Sargent.
Even for Sargent.
Well, thank you so very much for giving us a glimpse into the archive and into John Singer Sargent himself. It was really great to talk to you. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
That was Erica Hirschler, the Kroll Senior Curator of Painting at the MFA. She was showing Magna some of the 5,000 pieces of personal correspondence, pictures, and sketches from John Singer Sargent recently acquired by the museum. They're part of a new exhibit called Yours Sincerely, John S. Sargent. You can find a lot more information at RadioBoston.org. And that's it for today. That's our program. Radio Boston is a production of WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. I'm Anthony Brooks. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.